Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is fantastic to have you here for another episode. And this week we're talking about a really important topic. And that topic is leadership. Now, leadership is important in every element of your life, but we are looking at it specifically through the lens of running a dental practice and how to develop and grow your leadership capabilities. My guest today is Sally Foley Lewis, and Sally is an absolute expert when it comes to leadership. She's a global professional speaker. She's authored several books. Her most recent book, The Productive Leader, received an endorsement from the management guru, Brian Tracy, and she's just a really lovely person. She's got background in C-suite leadership. She's been a CEO. She works as a coach. She works on all sorts of different levels. And she's got wonderful experience, which has been recognized by numerous awards, including the 2020 Gold Stevie Award, the Breakthrough Speaker of the Year by the Professional Speakers Association, finalist for the Australian Learning Professional, and a whole lot of other awards in addition to that. So what Sally and I spoke about in this particular podcast was really all about how leadership starts with you. It's about understanding self-leadership. And once we've mastered self-leadership, we can then grow our team. We can help develop other leaders. We can look at the tools and the tactics and the resources that help us become more effective, more productive in our roles. But really, at the heart of it is self-leadership. It's about knowing ourselves, being consistent with our voice, with our values, and the way we show up in the world. So it's going to be a really good conversation for you to tune into. Sally shares an immense amount of value in this conversation. I can't stress that enough. So I really hope you enjoy this conversation. And most importantly, though, I really hope you take action on the information that Sally shares. If you want to find out more about Sally, please do head across to her website, sallyfoleylewis.com, and check out all the resources there. There's tons of them. But for now, I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I enjoyed recording it. Sally Foley Lewis, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is great to have you here. How's things?
Oh, everything is absolutely, considering our current climate, really, really great. Thanks, Jesse. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, look, it's great to have you here. And I've been a fan of your work for a while now. I've been scouring the internet looking for interesting speakers and people who are doing interesting work. And your name comes up again and again and again. And I'm really keen to explore a bit about your work and the books you've written and really to dive into the topic of leadership, because it is obviously, you're the subject matter expert on that, but it's also a really relevant topic for our audience. Now, but before we do get into that, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your background. You've got a background that's really rich and interesting. You've got a career that's been down lots of different paths. What is it that led you to think about productivity, to think about leadership, to think about all the things that you now talk about? What was the impetus to, you know, have that little pivot?
The impetus was around productivity, was being a bossy little girl before school and back in the dark ages when we had typewriters, so, you know, computers that aren't electric. I would have this little tiny typewriter on a desk with paper, and I would feed the paper through the typewriter, bash on the keys like I was some bossy know-it-all, and I would yell at my imaginary minions and stomp around the front room, and I would organize things, and I would move the furniture around, and everything was ordered and everything was in its place. And I have no idea what I was talking about, of course, because I was just a little child, but it stemmed from wanting to be organized, and it stemmed from somehow seeing that with the pre-work, the little bit of work we do before we jump into something, and organizing makes everything else seem to flow a little bit better. And then as I got older, everyone around the school years, people would congregate at our house because we were the organizers of the parties, don't tell mum. And that just seemed to be something that was quite innate. And as I moved through my career, blending into that was this passion about helping people and being in the front of the room to help people connect to what it is they need to know. And every role I've been in has some element of that. That's the sort of golden thread of wanting to serve others. And then stepping into a senior leadership role myself, having been super, super encouraged. And when I say super encouraged, basically shoved into a CEO role, and then getting there and finding it so isolating, so different to what I had thought it would be. And also being confronted with a whole lot of issues that were never present because you're in a more lower role. I found that a really interesting experience, and the support that I thought was going to come didn't arrive. And while I can say even more negative things about it, when I look back at it, what a rich and valuable experience that then was the impetus to even further keep serving others. And so it's led to me wanting to really help people, whether they're running their own business or practice, whether they are inside a big organization or a small organization, really nail this thing about leadership and feel as though they've got everything on board to help themselves and their teams run a really good tight ship.
I really, really resonate with what you're talking about there, Sally. And this is probably actually not quite the path I was going to go down first up. I've just thrown my notes out the window for a second. There we go. But you've touched on something that I think is a really important topic, and I don't want the conversation to pass by without me picking up on that. And you mentioned that when you were thrust into that CEO role, there was a sense of loneliness, a sense of isolation. And I know that lots of business owners that I talk to have that sense of, you know, it's me on my own fighting against the world, in inverted commas, or that kind of sensation of being alone. And I wanted to ask you, is that a common thing? Do you think that, you know, people in positions of either ownership of businesses or positions of leadership within other businesses, is that a common thing, that loneliness?
I think it is. And I think it's experienced in different degrees and in different, there are different triggers to it. But yes, overall, I think it can be quite common because I now run my own business as well. And I've had some pretty lonely days where I just want to throw my hands in the air and go get a job. And interestingly, that was all pre-COVID that I had those experiences. But we feel that because I think we sometimes get in our own heads and think no one else understands it like I do. And no one understands what I'm going through because this is my baby. This is my dream that I'm trying to actualize. And so that filter or that lens through which we're looking makes it even probably a bit harder to then look for the help we might need.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's a lot of people who experience what I call kind of workplace isolation or workplace loneliness. And I don't mean that they're sitting at their table crying necessarily, but having that place or that person to, you know, talk to and to seek counsel from is really, really valuable. So I think the work you're doing there, Sally, keep doing it because it's fantastic. And I know that you will keep doing it anyway, but I see that there's so much of an issue that, you know, you can help solve there. I wanted to talk about that bossy little girl for a second because I had an image pop up in my mind, and I'm going to say out loud the image was of my big sister because she was quite a bossy little girl. I was usually the minion around the office that was, you know, she would have been the one typing and directing me to make the cup of tea or something. But in any event, I wanted to ask you around that bossiness and your desire for structure because dentists, you know, almost without exception, and again, I don't want to tar everyone with the same brush, but without exception to the ones I've met at least, we love structure and we love to have that sense of order. We're very much that type A personality. And while that order allows us to create sense of our environment, allows us to bring order to the chaos, it can also be hindering in a sense of being able to step up into another leadership role or to be able to hand over things because we're worried that someone's not going to do it as well. So I wondered, you know, did you experience that yourself? You know, struggling to delegate and hand over things, you know, that sense of neatness and orderliness, was that obviously it served you, but did it ever hinder you at all?
Absolutely, it hindered me. But mine came from once, and I had to have some support to work this out in my early days. My lack of delegating came from wanting to be helpful. and to be valued. And so, you know, let's get on the psychologist couch now.
But tell me about your mother, Sally.
But that's, you know, this is the thing about delegating. There are so many barriers to delegating that managers tell me about, which are absolutely valid. I will never argue with anybody who tells me why they don't delegate, because that's a true barrier for them. But then if you're working with me, be prepared, because we're going to go deeper. We're going to look at the fear that's driving that. And so I didn't delegate because I had some surface level reasons that I would use, like, everyone's busy, I'm just trying to be helpful. But then when you pull back that onion layer, what my hindrance or my fear that was actually driving it was I wanted to be valued and I wanted to be seen as important and part of. And that's my little monkey that I have to deal with and get it off my back. But absolutely, when you're talking about being orderly and being structured and being in a sense of control, what happens is that if it's taken too far, things actually get out of control. And so we grip even tighter and we become the micromanager we never, ever wanted to be. And what we do is we don't step back and look at, okay, what are the barriers we talk about that we're actually saying to people about why we don't delegate? And I don't trust them to do it the right way. They don't understand my expectations. What if they get it wrong? You know, all these sort of reasons. And then we look at, well, what's driving that? And it's a fear of making a mistake. It's a fear of, heaven forbid, that you get something wrong and it actually has a knock-on effect and impacts your patients, and you lose, you know, if you lose patients, you lose money, you impact in a bottom line kind of way. And that's a real fear. And so when we can really put a spotlight on those, then we can put strategies in place to help actually reverse all that and then give you the right structure that you need. And so every single time I do a delegation workshop, right at the end of the day, everyone just sits back and in their chair and goes, why wasn't I doing this before? You know, and because the structure that I use to help people to delegate actually feeds into the little control freaks that we all are in the right way.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, I'm going to put my hand up in the air and say I'm a bit of a control freak too. And I was just thinking about my own fears when I've delegated. And for me, it's come, yeah, it's my turn to get on the couch for a second, but move over.
Dr. Sally is in the house. No, totally.
But it's about reputation. You know, you worry about your reputation being sullied because you've given up this thing to someone else, and you worry if they're going to do it well enough, how that reflects on you, how that's going to reflect on your own personal standing in the community. And I think that, you know, whether it's the need to be valued like you've expressed or my worry about reputation, I am sure that someone listening to this podcast will probably come up with a third or fourth reason that they worry about. There's plenty, right? But you know, there'll be a bunch of people that kind of go, yeah, I totally get what Sally's talking about. And there'll be others that say, yeah, Jesse, I totally understand. And there'll be others that, you know, have their own reasons. So it's obviously something that a lot of us experience is what I'm trying to get at. And so,
And it's interesting because there was a research piece that I looked at to write the Delegate book where, now I'm going to get the numbers wrong, but there was a horrendously high number of these companies. There was 333 companies surveyed, and some horrendously high number said that they want their management teams and they want their senior leaders to be delegating. And then they went back and asked the same number, well, of those, how many do they actually give delegation training? And it was a third.
Wow.
So this is a skill. And, you know, whether you're running a practice or, you know, running your own business and you have staff, and even if you have a practice manager, even, you know, have you actually sat down and done some real unpacking of this skill? You know, a lot of people call it the art of delegating. And I think there's something in that, because there's structure, there's beauty, there's flow, there's trust, there's the human element. And I think it's so important that, you know, we just assume people know how to delegate once they step up into these particular positions. When you start your business and you start to employ people, you give instructions. And you might have the development of some human resources policies and procedures manuals, and you can see how that might cloud the understanding of delegation. Whereas this is a human skill we need to actually take on board.
So I'd like to talk about that, because I've certainly been guilty of drive-by delegation in the past. And, yeah, you're running down a corridor and you issue an instruction and, you know, delegation done, tick, but not really, of course. So if we were to want to flex this muscle, build this skill, get into understanding how to do this well compared to my former drive-by delegation, what would be a couple of things to be thinking about if you wanted to build that skill?
Yeah. So what I talk about, sort of the secret sauce to delegating, slow is fast. And what I mean by that is, even in a very, very hectic, busy day, you need to slow it down, and not slow it down to a stop, but just slow it down enough to think first before you delegate. And what we don't tend to do is put even 2 minutes more thinking into how I want this to be done, what success looks like, what resources the person might need, how it could be communicated, and then have a really quality conversation. And it might be a quality conversation that's carved up in 5-minute chunks over the course of a day. It doesn't matter how it's done, as long as it's done, but slowing it down just that little bit at the beginning of a delegation means that you'll have less mistakes, less miscommunication, and therefore less redos, less chance of it being reverse delegated, which means it gets dumped back onto your desk anyway.
Yeah.
You know, less bottlenecking can happen. You have less wrong initiative taking. And so slow is fast is one of the biggest things that I talk about when teaching delegation. And the other one is, and it's closely related or closely follows on from truly understanding your barriers and your fears, is trust. If you don't trust, then you're going to fall into most likely your tendencies to micromanage. You're going to avoid delegating. And so what are the relationships like that you have with your team? Start there. Even if you can sit down and say, okay, you know, I don't delegate. Why don't I delegate? Well, they don't do it to my standard. I don't trust they'll do it right. I don't trust this. Or I feel like I don't have any control. That's all control and trust issues, obviously. And so I would say, okay, before you even think about delegating, how about you start building a good quality, strong relationship? Get to know your people. Do something like a Belbin team roles activity where you get to understand the type of roles people like to play or their default behaviors that they can bring that are strengths for the team. Do a DISC, you know, profile on everyone so that you can really start to use some sort of assessment tool like that as a launch pad into strengthening the relationships. And that will set you up as the leader to go, okay, well, I know Jane is fantastic at scheduling. She's the queen of scheduling. She gets scheduling. I know that now. I feel confident in that because we've had that conversation, and I can hand that over with a lot more confidence that she's going to be okay with it.
Yeah, I really think that there's a lot of wisdom in all of that. I think also, you know, you touched on knowing your people, knowing their strengths, knowing what their skill sets, but not only what their skill sets are, but what their values and passions and drivers are as well. And I think, you know, there's a lot of really cool stuff that people can explore there.
Yes.
Sally, I want to ask you a little bit about leadership and just change gear for a second, which is actually where I was going to start our conversation, because a lot of the people listening to this podcast, in fact, the vast majority will own a dental practice. And if you ask most dental practice owners, what would they like from their business? Usually there's a multitude of ways of expressing this, but usually it comes back to having a mix of money, time, and meaning or purpose. And obviously that mix is going to be very specific and individual for whomever it is. But if we're going to create that, there is a point where we need to develop the team, develop other leaders, develop our own leadership skills. So I wanted to just talk a little bit about leadership. And obviously you've spoken about the productive leader as compared to the busy leader. So we might just talk momentarily before we get into leadership per se about the busyness trap. How do we fall into this busyness trap all the time where we feel like we're constantly running. And you know, in this post-COVID world that we're recording this in, it feels like the world has just sped up a couple of degrees or two. And I don't know if everyone else feels that, but it feels like everyone's running hard.
Definitely. And I think when everyone went home to work, there was this concern about being seen as still being productive while I'm at home. And so a lot of people gave up their commute time. Mm. And I was a big advocate for saying, no, that's actually your time. Mm. And so use it to be making sure you're staying well and looking after yourself. I had one particular person who was running a small business. It was not dentistry, but it was a small business. And I said to, we talked about commute times and how they're being used. And so that owner said, okay, well, yes, I probably should be looking after myself a bit more, but I want to look after my people. And I said, okay, well, let's do a negotiation. So alternating weeks, the commute time was for the boss. And then the other week it was actually just checking in with everyone else. And so there's this absolute rampant drive to be busy. And you want to be seen to be busy because activity and being seen to be active seems to have that equation, or it provides the visual answer to productivity, when in actual fact, achievement is what I want people to focus on.
I really 100% agree with everything you say there. And one of the things that I think about business and productivity as well is, if we are going to grow a business, we need to be able to get off that treadmill for a while, because the work that actually needs to be done to grow a business is often thought work, you know, thinking work, rather than doing work, you know, seeing more patients and doing whatever it is. And one of the challenges that I find in the coaching work that I do is saying to the clients I work with is, you know, for your business to grow, you need to stop doing so much dentistry. In other words, staying hands-on clinically is going to be a rate-limiting factor for the growth of the business. Is that something that you see in other businesses as well?
Absolutely. And I think it's one of those things where you need to be very clear about, back to your point, Jesse, about money, time, and meaning. And if you want a large practice or practices, and you want to be able to serve a lot of people, then there's a tipping point at which you need to get off the tools, or let me rephrase that actually, it's actually adopt different tools. Mm. And because I think that can be quite concerning. And you know, you and I can sit here and be quite, can sound flippant about just get off the tools. And I know that's not what we're trying to do, because there's a transition. Yeah. You know, you're about to put those tools that you've been working with for a long time into someone else's hands. And so, again, it comes back to really good quality relationships with the people that you're bringing in, and being able to have a really robust structure around supporting you and the growth of your business. So that it's almost like the confidence that you have in what you're doing is actually held up in the structure that you have, so that you can be refocusing on actually being a leader of people rather than a leader of a business. And so what I mean by that is, you're always going to be the leader of the business. It's your business. But what I mean by that, you're there guiding, supporting, and developing and growing the people who are the ones that are growing the business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, for the business to grow, then the people must grow first, yes. Right? And
yes.
And that becomes our role as the leader of the people, is to help them become their best selves. And obviously, we want to, you know, develop other leaders. But let's talk about a step before that. That's self-leadership. And I know this is a topic that you're, you know, really engaged and involved in. But can we just talk about why that's important and why it needs to come before leading others?
Absolutely. When we don't have our own self-leadership in check, the best way to think about this is imagine the worst boss, or remember the worst boss you ever had, and then start to really think about, what was it about the way they led themselves that made them a terrible boss? And so, for example, I had a really, really horrendous boss in one job many years ago who didn't even look after themselves, was really inconsistent in their behavior. And that was driven by, one day he'd have this value of driving the business and money, and the next day he'd have a value of putting his people first, which was very quickly dissolved back into the money. And then the next day it'd be a value of ethics and justice. And it's like, well, which value are you operating from today? Mm. And we all have more than one value, but the way in which it came out was inconsistent. His voice was also not a great voice to hear, and not a great voice that was about his interpersonal communication skills. The way in which he spoke about himself was quite inconsistent again. So from one day he would be trying to be this all humble, self-effacing type person and self-deprecating in his humor. And then the next day he would be telling us how he scored top points on a leadership assessment. And we're all sitting there thinking, yeah, no, you didn't. No. And so his voice was inconsistent. And then the third component that I put into self-leadership, so we've got values, voice, and the third one is visibility. You know, he would only ever show up when something was wrong, and he would berate people in a very humiliating and very public way, and he would never follow up, and he would, his self-image, I often questioned. I always thought I was never ever going to be, you know, it would be a career-limiting move to ask him, what's your self-image? Because I'm pretty sure I'd lose my job. But I always questioned and sort of observed him from the sidelines thinking, you just are really unsure about yourself. Your messaging is all over the place. You're willing to show up once in a blue moon and tear strips off people, get them to be doing something, but never follow up to see if they've done it. Your values are all over the place, and your voice is again, something that people don't find easy to follow. And so that sort of leadership, you know, we all would get text messages from office staff to say, don't come in, he's coming, like that.
Wow.
You know, so that, see how his self-leadership was all over the place, or lacking, and that flows out. You know, it has that ripple effect. So if we don't have our values and our voice and our visibility in check, then we don't look all that like we have a whole lot of integrity. We actually exude a pretty poor image, and people question your leadership intelligence, your emotional intelligence, and your social intelligence, and just basically some days even your intelligence.
Yeah, wow, there's a whole lot there. Sally, interestingly enough, I'm listening to the story of your ex-boss, and I'm thinking about, you know, my worst boss that I ever had as well, and there's a couple of doozies in there. And I wanted to ask you a question. This may be, it's a tough one. You said that bringing it up with him would have been a career limiting move. And I understand why it would be a career limiting move. And I understand why you would not bring it up. But if we want to develop our own leadership skills, and you know, all of us have bad days, all of us have flaws and faults and so on, how do we create that space so that our team can give us that reflective feedback, where they know that it's not going to be, you know, their head on the chopping block, but equally, you know, it's not just pick on the boss day, and, you know, we can take something valuable from that exchange. How do we create that space?
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant question. And you know, when I'm working with a lot of leaders and they start saying, but after this course, how do I go back and what are they going to think of me? And I feel like I'm a different person now, and I'm a better person, and I want that feedback, which is the actual answer to your question. But how do I show up now? Because they know me from before. And I lean in and say, they're so going to respect you. They're so going to appreciate that you've done the work on you. So number one, people will, you know, they may actually be a bit hesitant to speak up at first, but again, if you're consistently on this journey to keep firing up your own self-leadership, then people will rely on that consistency. And so asking people for feedback is a very general question. I would say to a lot of business owners and leaders to be saying, ask really specific feedback. So, for example, one of the things you may do is with one person only, in the next team meeting you have, just quietly before the meeting, say to them, I would really value feedback on how I run the meeting. I really am interested in my tone of voice and my body language. And then afterwards, could we have a 5-minute chat? And you've got 100% permission to just give me your perspective on what you see when it comes to my tone and my body language in running this meeting. So go micro insofar as being able to give people a really good structure. Because if I said to you, just give me feedback on the meeting, well, that's huge, really. When you start to think about how it was run, what people said, the decisions, the timing, participation, your chairing of it, like which bit. So I think asking for really specific feedback in little tiny chunks consistently will lead to a whole lot of fantastic information. And that also helps the leader then to make really tiny, consistent changes or improvements, which can lead to massive transformation.
Yeah, you're spot on. Those little incremental changes consistently over time, it's like that whole saying that if you're 1 degree over time, that turns into a totally different direction, and you have the opportunity to take yourself and the business in a whole new direction, but with that incremental change is consistently done.
Yes. And can I just add to that, Jesse? Sorry.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
The reason why I say tiny little incremental bits and pieces every single day, something every day that's really tiny, is more doable for someone who is running a massively busy, hectic business, you know? Yeah. Like, let's do this the right way so that you don't fall apart and then go back to default behaviors that really don't serve you. You know, you might want to do, if you see yourself as needing to work on your own self-leadership, then some sort of workshop might be a great kickstart. But out of that workshop, what's the one tiny thing you're going to start tomorrow? Then what's the one tiny next thing you'll do the next day? That's what I think is really important, because this has got to be doable, and otherwise you won't do it.
Yeah, totally. And I know you coach a lot in this space and help people take what comes out of that workshop and implement it. So as you go through that implementation, the incremental changes, what are the things, or the, you know, what's the outcome basically? You know, how does that show up, you know, after you've been doing those incremental changes for a year or two? What sort of things do you typically see in the coaching work that you do?
I find a lot of leaders have really strong confidence in themselves, and strong, not over, but strong confident in understanding not only that they know what they know and they know what they can do, but they also have a blend with resilience that they can handle whatever's going to come their way. They've got that efficacy. And so they're able to say, all right, I don't know what's going to hit me next. Like if COVID hits again or in some other sort of version of this, I know that I've got the skills to work it out. As opposed to someone who just says, oh, what do we do? I don't know what to do. I don't, you know, and yeah, okay, there might be a little bit of panic at the start, but you actually then kick in and know, hang on, breathe. I've got the skills to work this out. So that confidence and resilience shows up. Another big one is really clear about boundaries, boundaries for themselves and boundaries for the team. And this is because this is a big breach area, especially people who run businesses and are on the tools during the day and then they're on the books at night, you know?
So
boundaries is a big one, a really big one that I think gets really sorted out. And you know, sometimes boundaries will be broken with exceptions, but then they're pulled back in. They're not let go of. So boundaries is a big one. The other one is also standing out inside in the sense of you become the voice of reason, you become the voice of calm, and you also become visible as someone that people want to be working for and people want advice from within the industry. So you become an employer of choice as well. And that means that you'll have people who will stay by you longer, and therefore your, you know, your bottom line costs of turnover, let's face it, that's really cheap, isn't it? Not, you know, yeah, turnover is huge. The cost of turnover is massive. And so when you've got your self-leadership in check and it ripples out to your leadership of your team, people will stay with you longer. And you're seen as, like I said, the employer of choice. You've got that integrity. You've got a great self-image, but you've also got a great external image that people want to resonate with. And I think that's really important.
Yeah. Can we just explore boundaries for a second? Because I think this is a really important thing. And you spoke about being on the tools during the day and doing the books at night. We exactly have a similar saying, you know, doing dentistry by day, running the business by night, same sort of thing.
Mm.
And I want to talk about boundaries because boundaries is an area that we see a lot of people struggling with. We see that the exceptions become the rule and all of a sudden there was a boundary and now there's none. And so I want to just talk about, firstly, how to set up reasonable boundaries, allowing people to get things from us that they need to be able to do their job, but also not feeling like we're being pulled in 100 directions. So what would be a couple of basics when it comes to setting reasonable boundaries and then a couple of key thoughts around maintaining those boundaries?
Yeah, so setting up boundaries, I think, is really important to understand what it is you want a boundary about.
Mm.
You know, is it time? Is it space? Is it the work? Is it the people? Is it language? Is it all manner of things? So sitting down and just free form, you know, free conscious thinking, just jot down everything that you want to have a boundary about, knowing that that's not going to happen for all of them necessarily straight away, but then understanding what you want. And sometimes we need to go back to the basics and actually review and reflect and reconnect with our own values. And starting there might be a good place to start for some people. Mm. So understanding what you want is the first place. Yep. And then second is being able to articulate that and be able to communicate it. And you may need to communicate it quite a lot and be really consistent with that because it's a transition. And through change, people will not understand that you've put a boundary in place because that's not what it was before. You know, we're creatures of habit. And even for our own selves, we may fall back into old habits as well. Like you said, the exception becomes a norm. And I would say having a few people around you who can help and hold you to account, the accountability piece is really big. And and saying, look, this is my boundary. I am determined to be only doing 2 hours of book work a night for the next 6 months or whatever, you know, some sort of step-by-step process to minimizing the amount of work I do at home. And so you would be talking to the people around you, the people who can support you, and giving them permission to hold you to account. And, you know, one of the classics is also that I find with boundaries is not being able to say no. And I think that's a big one. And one of the things I think is really important is knowing that at the end of the day, most people want to help. And so when people ask us for help, it feels good because they've seen something in us that makes us feel valued. Oh, there comes my psychology again. but we do, we feel good. Someone wants my help. Someone wants me to help them. This is fantastic. And so it can trigger some ego in us. And so it's important that we recognize that if we're really not the right person or it's not the right time, no is not actually the accurate answer. Mm. And when we say no, we feel as though we might run the risk of pushing back on a boundary, breaching someone else's boundary. We might be denting the relationship a bit. Some people even might feel like it's a career-limiting move. So there are alternatives to no, and it could be, I'm not the right person. How about asking such and such? Or I don't know what that is. Have you looked at this and this? I would love to help you, but not right now. So it's not me, not that, and not now.
Mm.
And it's about crafting the response so that it's crafted in a way that it actually helps redirect the person so that they're not breaching the boundary or your boundary.
Yeah. I think, again, I really appreciate you explaining that because I think it's a common thing. Also, I've made a bazillion mistakes in that space in the past. I hope I'm getting better. I think I'm getting better. Certainly not perfect. But I wanted to talk to you and kind of tie this with a conversation we had just a few minutes prior to that. And that was really about, you know, how we get off the tools or use new tools, because I think this is going to tie together really well. So if we say we want to free up some clinical time, we've then got to say, well, and use it for what? And, you know, this is where I think boundaries might come into it as well, because I know that, you know, certainly when I took myself away from clinical work, I would have no structure because a dentist appointment book is, you know, very regimented. It's, you know, Mrs. Smith's coming in at 9, Bob's coming in at 10, and so on and so forth. And you've got your whole day mapped out by an appointment book. And for the first period of time when I didn't have that appointment book structure, I'd sit at my desk and I'd be going, now what? And I think that there's a worry about freeing up this clinical time and not using it productively and not having the right boundaries in place, whether they're boundaries even for myself. So can we just talk a little bit about productivity and what to do with that time when you do free it up, what boundaries might be relevant and pertinent as you go through that process, but equally any other structures, any other thoughts you have about taking something that's non-structured and being productive with it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a lot of people who go from a job to a business really do find themselves with this false sense of free time. Mm. And, you know, your own example, I think, is very common for a lot of people too. And I actually think you already had the answer with the appointment book.
Mm.
And a lot of people ask me when it comes to productivity, what's my favorite app on my phone? And I look at them and said, I'm so going to disappoint you because it is not what you're going to think it is. And they say, oh, wait, which one is it? Which one is it? And it's like, it's called your calendar. See how I disappointed you. So, you know, the big hurrah is your calendar. And this is where you've already got a really good, strong muscle memory or, you know, neural pathway already set inside of you because you had an appointment book.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of habit, that kind of understanding and that kind of experience is already on board for you. So extend it. And now the biggest argument or the biggest pushback I get from that is, oh, but if I fill my whole calendar in, then I won't have any free time. And it's, well, no, because you're actually going to schedule free time. Mm. And I'm going to be a little bit cheeky here and say, and please forgive me for saying this, listeners, but I schedule date night and everything. So, yeah, because I don't want, because I'm the type of person who can sit in my office and work 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. I love what I do. But that's not fair for the people I love. And so I actually schedule family, which sounds so terrible when I say it like that, but it's down tools, it's time with them, and it's quality time. And it's actually in the calendar because I want to make sure that I have a sense of a balanced life. And actually scheduling playtime, scheduling exactly what it is you want to be doing, and then taking that a layer deeper, and this is where it comes to the boundaries kind of concept as well, is chunking your time or batching, depending on who you talk to and how it's described. There's a technique called the Pomodoro technique, which was based on a kitchen cooking timer that was the shape of a Pomodoro tomato. Mm-hmm. And so I use a version of the Pomodoro technique, and that is if I have got scheduled into my calendar that I'm going to be writing 3 blog posts, you know, or it's content creation might be what's in my calendar from 10 till 11, then at 10 a.m. I sit down and I actually say, okay, from 10:05 to 10:30, I'm going to just write. I'm just going to write whatever's in my head about whatever the content is that I want to get out. And then I set a timer and I have everything else switched off. No one's allowed to talk to me. There are no emails. The phone is off. I don't even have snacks on my desk because I fell prey to that when I first started doing this. Yeah. I have a drink and that's it. And so for that 25 minutes, that's all I'm doing. And this also comes back to the busy versus achievement as well, because at the end of that 25 minutes, I've probably knocked out far more than I would ever have done had I been allowed to be distracted by the phone, the email, or anything else that, you know, bells and whistles that pops up. And so we go from scheduling ourselves, which at first feels like you've scheduled yourself to within an inch of a life, but we schedule the play as well as the work. And then we then categorize that down and then we chunk that down and make sure that we then have those clear boundaries and we have achievement. I don't know if that's made – does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense to me. Okay. And goodness knows, I hope my wife was listening to this podcast because – I scheduled date night and my wife as well. But I'm going to tell you that I got a bit of pushback on that because she didn't like the idea of being scheduled. And so she said, I'm not an appointment for you. And you'll laugh when I tell you this. So I said, but I'm not trying to schedule you like I would a patient or a client or anything like that. I'm trying to prioritize time with you. And nonetheless, it took a little while for her to accept that. And she said, no, take it out of the calendar. So I took it out of the calendar and it didn't happen. And then a couple of months later, she said, do you think we can put that back in the calendar? And I said, well, my calendar's busy for the next few weeks. But yeah, when it opens up, I'll put it in. And I'm saying that cheekily because you know what that conversation would have been like.
Yep. I love it, Jesse. Yeah. And that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, I get how almost clinical it does. It looks clinical and it can feel clinical, but it's the conversation around it. And it's absolutely, totally. You are my priority and I want to make sure I don't fall into bad habits. I love you and I love our time. And so I want to make sure that I don't slip. And that can apply to, you know, not just our spouses and partners, but it's our family time. It's also our exercise and well-being time. And I would get out a whole calendar and I would actually start with plotting school holidays, birthdays, and start there. When in actual fact, what a lot of people do is schedule work first.
Totally. I think you've got to get, I agree with you, you've got to get that macro view of holidays and school holidays and rest time and do all that. And interestingly enough, I'm going to ask you a question without notice. Mm-hmm. Do you see any correlation between productivity and the amount of holidays people take? I'm just curious to ask.
Oh, that is an interesting question. The first thing that just popped into my head was a recent study, and I'd have to go back and find where I read it. So I don't have the source in my head right now. But what that study found was once you work 50 hours a week, after the 50th hour, your productivity drops to basically zero. Oh, wow. So the correlation to productivity and holidays. In my head, how I'm interpreting your question is that if you put your holidays in first and you schedule and make a priority the downtime, the knock-on effect should be that when you are plugged in, switched on and working, you're more productive because you don't then dribble and scope creep your work past work time.
Yeah, yeah.
Have I interpreted your question correctly?
You've absolutely nailed it. So, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. You know, I work with a lot of people who take their work home, and I totally get that if you're running your own business, you're on the tools at day and on the books at night, but you can still start to pull that in a bit. And some of the things that I find interesting is when people say, I'll just take that home with me. It's like, no, do it now. What's the priority? You know, what truly is the biggest and most important priority right now? And stop and think and give yourself these 1.5 to 2 minute planning moments through a day to actually breathe, oxygenate the brain so we can think a bit better and be calm and go, what is the best use of my time right now? What's the biggest ROI I can give myself? And then, you know, the problem with, you know, scope creep and everyone doing more and more work at home after hours is we become more and more tired. And then that's that cumulative effect that we end up just never getting enough sleep, never being our best selves. So,
I don't have the data for it, but just intuitively I think, you know, giving ourselves time to decompress and to rest just makes intuitive sense. And I really appreciate what you're sharing there because I think all business owners that I know of have a tendency to overwork and the effects of that long-term, again, I don't have data to support this, but my hypothesis is that long-term stress accumulation is just not good for you. But, you know, we'll find some data around that another day. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about leadership and I wanted to ask you a little bit about COVID because you mentioned COVID once or twice in our conversation today. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about your observations. And again, not wanting to throw people under the bus, not wanting to be critical, but just I'm curious to ask you how you saw leadership through the COVID lens. When things are good, it's one thing to be a leader. When times are uncertain or things are kind of changing rapidly, as happened, you know, around a year ago, I'm curious to ask you, what were your observation of leaders at that time, whether that's not necessarily government leaders, but business leaders, community leaders, people generally, self-leadership. What were your thoughts around that?
Yeah, great question. Well, I was on a stage being awarded a Breakthrough Speaker of the Year award the minute the government said, everybody go home. So I giggled and went, well, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to be speaking for a while. And I went home to having lost a lot of work. And in my head, because of probably what's in my nature to be to serve and be of value to people, I just reached out to all my clients and just said, tell me what you need me to do so that you can be the best leader for your people right now. And what I found in having one-on-one conversations, I did Zoom drop-ins with teams, I did management team coaching sessions, and what I was finding was I don't know how to help them. I don't know what to say. I'm worried about them. I just want to be there for them. And that was, you know, I couldn't have asked for something better. You know, like my heart just filled up because you could see how much these leaders wanted their people to be okay. And so we talked about some strategies around, you know, you've got to be communicating. Even if you don't know the answer to something, be on the other end of that phone, Teams, Zoom, whatever, and listen and step into a coach mode, you know, help people find their own answers through their own guidance and questions. And then what I was finding was that there was a lot of loss and a lot of confusion at the beginning. But what I sort of found come out the other end of it fairly quickly, I'd say too, for Australia, was there were some silver linings. You know, we talked to leaders about, okay, now's the time because of this, now's the time to get the team to focus on what is the most important work we should be doing. What can we now clean out? What cupboards can we get rid of? You know, what has really not been serving us? And because of COVID, it's actually asked us to come back to core, come back to mission. And that helped a lot of people as well. So at first people were worried and concerned, and then they just got on with it and, you know, it put the infrastructure in place, and then it was, now what do we do? Yeah. So I'm not sure how, if I've answered you well there, but that was the experience I had. And the leaders were really focusing on that. A lot of the leaders are just focusing on how they can help their people. And so I was always asking, well, how can I help you? And a lot of them said, just knowing that I had their back, just knowing that someone has their back, and that we talked about managing their time and making sure they're prioritizing their own health and well-being was so important, so critical. Mental health was a huge issue.
Yeah, and still is, I think, but that's perhaps another conversation. But interestingly, Sally, one of the things that came out of some of the conversations I had with the people I work with was they were trying really hard to be there for their people, and yet internally they were trying to deal with their own stresses and strains, but still, you know, look after others while they're trying to cope with their own stuff. And so it was a really interesting and difficult time. But I think I really like what you said. It brought people back to core. And I think it did show people or illustrate really carefully and clearly, you know, what is important. But equally, it also allowed people to be aware of the opportunities that come along as well. You know, with every adversity, you would have seen it, I'm sure, 1,000 times in the work you do, that there's an opportunity that comes out as well. But I really like what you said about thinking about your people and putting your people first. Because again, if we're going to grow our business, it's going to come back to how well we develop our people, support our people, and do all the rest of it.
Can I just add to that also that when we are in service of others, we tend to stay out of our own head. And that can help at times.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's where you put your focus, isn't it? While we're talking about developing others, I do want to talk about briefly developing other leaders. For the business to grow, the people must grow, and so on. And so rather than having a master and commander style of leadership, you know, Russell Crowe, head north, you know, 3 degrees or whatever it is, he might yell from the bridge of the ship with his telescope in hand, looking very nautical in his white tights.
Anyway, I have an image in my head now.
I'm so sorry. I went there. I shouldn't have, but I did, and it was irresistible. My impulse control failed me at that moment. But what I want to ask you is, rather than adopting that, you know, heroic style of leadership, we want to be able to develop other leaders within the business. And it's one thing to master our own leadership and to be going through the things you spoke about earlier. But how do you see it unfolds in an organization where you're looking to try and build a leadership team? What are the essential elements of building a leadership team?
So I think it's about understanding and being able to know your people and understand their strengths. And again, it comes back to who are your people, and do you have people who want to step up into and have more responsibility and more opportunities? And of those, where do their strengths lie and where do they want to be demonstrating and using those strengths?
Once you know the people, what are the practices that you might go through to help them become the best that they can be, to help them develop their own leadership? How do you transfer that leadership to others?
I think it's about going into this, you know, helping your people fire up their own self-leadership, and starting with that and understanding that they have a responsibility to be the best version of themselves, because it has a knock-on effect across the whole of the business, to the people they work with, the people they then have to lead, and to the patients that you see and the people who are paying their wages, let's face it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I think starting with that is probably a key piece, and doing in a very pragmatic or practical way, you could do leadership training, or you could even start with any sort of assessment piece that looks at understanding emotional intelligence and building that self-awareness, doing a values exercise and building from there. I'm quite obsessed, might be the right word, with starting your self-leadership amplification with values, voice, and visibility. And out of that, there's 9 steps that I follow, and it starts with self-awareness. So self-awareness, and then understanding the responsibility one has to themselves and to others. Because I think when you get that fundamentally, then people can either choose to then step into the leadership roles, or they can step back and say, you know what, I actually don't want to do that. And I love it when people have got that clarity. You know, I work with movers, improvers, and removers. That's how I categorize. You know, there's people who want to move up that ladder as fast as they can, so we've got to manage that and train and skill and develop. Then we've got improvers, and those are the ones who are happy where they are, so let's just make sure they've got everything they need to shine right there. And then we've got the removers, who might have got into a leadership role and then go, hell no, get me out of here. So how do we help them out with dignity and respect? And so that self-awareness piece is so critical. And then we move through to understanding our motivators and understanding our strengths and what we bring in our leadership. And then it's about how we have good quality interpersonal communication skills and the voice of a leader when we need to speak up, and also understanding our own self-talk as we transition to that leadership role. And then we move around into understanding our network and how we communicate with others and build relationships, and constantly focusing on that sort of that shift from task and individual contributor to people leader. And that there's a bit of letting go and a little of that individual contributor tools to picking up the people manager, people leader to relationship. So from almost, for want of a better way of describing it, transactional to interpersonal, and making sure that we are walking through our day with integrity.
Yeah. There's a lot in that, Sally. Yes. There's a big amount of stuff in that. And you've been incredibly generous with your time today. We've put you on the couch. You've allowed us to peer inside your mind and to understand what makes you tick. And while we're on the topic of what makes you tick, if we were to think about leadership in all its forms and all its glory today, and you know, we've touched on different elements of, you know, delegation, productivity, self-leadership, others, and so on, What would be, if we were to focus on, you know, one or two or three key bullet points, you know, the gospel according to Sally, if you will, what would be if we could take you back to being that bossy little girl and you're going to issue an edict, you know, type it out, bang out those keys. I'm old enough to know what a typewriter is too, but if we were to, you know, type two or three key bullet points onto that page, what would be your key takeaways that people, you know, really, you kind of the messages you want people to take away from today?
Oh, thank you. So I've got to keep this short, don't I, dear idea?
Not necessarily, but I'm trying to give you opportunity to be short if you want to be.
Yeah, start with you. You know, if you want to shine as a leader and you want to grow a business and you need to do that through the people that you engage and employ, and start with you. Because let's face it, my analogy is dogs can smell fear and humans can smell BS. Sorry about that. So if you're not congruent, if you're not the person who you say you are, then let's just stop and have a look at that and go back and reconnect with your values. You've got values. You just might not have looked at them or understood them or paid any attention to them for a while or something, you know. So go back to self and work on you. Because my own experience over the last umpteen years, 20 years of doing this, is that it always has started with that individual when they've got an incredible sense of self. They understand themselves. They work on their confidence. They work on their motivation. And from that comes courage to make those decisions. And as we said before, if you're in that tipping point of trying to grow a business and having to let go of the day tools so that someone else can pick them up and you can then grow your business, then that takes courage. And I'd say that that actually comes from working on you as a starting point. There's a lot of mechanics that we can plug in around that, like your scheduling, your productivity, your you know, how you delegate, how you give feedback conversations. And they're, to me, they're the mechanics that we just plug and play around that. But let's start with you.
Yeah, lovely, lovely. Sally, you've been really, really generous with your time today. For those people that want to find out more about what you do, get a hold of your book, which we've got a couple of books we can talk about, but particularly The Productive Leader and others around delegation, self-leadership. Is the best place to find that content at your website, sallyfoleylewis.com? Is that the best place?
There's only one of me in this world, which is a blessing, and that's where you'll find me. So, yeah, thank you.
Oh, wonderful. Ladies and gents, I hope you've enjoyed our conversation with Sally today. Please do check out Sally's resources. I've had a good noodle around her website. There's videos, there's podcast audio files, there's a bunch of stuff there. And go and check it out because I think it's a really good resource. And of course, if you want to talk to Sally, I guess the best way would be on the social channels or to, you know, submit an inquiry through the website. But Sally, once again, you've been really kind, really generous with your time today. And thank you so much.
My pleasure, Jesse. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.